Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Tuesday edition of the Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. What kind of mood are you today, sir? We haven't really covered you. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Yeah.
Life's all right.
Sure.
Are you feeling good about the stuff that we watched this week?
I don't feel bad. I don't think about much, if any, of what we watched this week. Now I'm trying to think if there's something I'm not thinking about that I really hated. But no, I think I feel pretty good. Yeah, I feel like it's been a good week.
Yeah, it's weird. I watched a thing. I watched the end of WandaVision after I finished watching all of the homework this week.
Oh, we could talk about that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, WandaVision. The end of WandaVision, and just, I would say, honestly, the experience of WandaVision in general,
I think
put me in a bad mood. Reflected it sort of makes me look back at everything else and just kind of be like, eh.
Oh, great. This should be fun.
It's going to be a fun pod. Everything about the show when we first talked about it, right?
Yeah.
Was how, oh, this is different and it's a really interesting take. And we're going to, they're really using the television platform to build out this world and say something new. And you know what? In the end, it was just a bunch of mythological nonsense and a shit ton of expensive but dull CGI and wizard battles that I've seen before. And what just the way that show unraveled into comic book soup was such it was a total bummer to me. Total bummer to me. Because I was kind of enjoying the interesting experimentation. But I just think that all of this Marvel crap, if you don't like, it doesn't matter if you have good actors and people making it and it's interesting. Like when the story just becomes, you have this power and it's more of this, and then you need to get the Infinity Stone to do the blah, blah, blah. And it's so fucking stupid that it ultimately hamstrings all of the rest of that, no matter how good your cast is or whatever acting came before it.
For you, it hamstrings it. I mean, I think, you have to recognize you're in the dwindling minority on that.
I am, but it's so frustrating because I don't understand why people like this garbage. I'm not trying to be snobby about it.
Well, no, I mean, I think I can answer this for you. The fundamental thing is that millions and millions and millions of people like fantastical comic book style stories. They do. They're in where you're out at the very beginning. And then I think for that huge number of people, the subset that enjoys creativity and interesting storytelling and experimentation appreciates something like WandaVision more. And I think we have the probably at this point ill-conceived desire at that point to tell people who aren't a big fan of comic book stuff, hey, you know what? This is actually kind of interesting beyond just being a comic book thing. Maybe you should check it out. And then usually you end up disappointed because at the end, yes, it's all a comic book thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I felt bad for Catherine Hahn by the end of it. I'm like, really? They're making you do this?
Well,
how many times are you going to go, no? Like, it's it's all stupid.
Yeah, but again, I mean, like, that really is not that offensive unless you're initially turned off and offended by the very premise in the first place.
It's not. Look, it's not even so much the premise. It's just how much of this do you need? You know, like if there's just an endless series of movies like this, you know what I mean? And shows, and they all end the same way. Like, I don't understand.
You mean when you say they all end the same way, you mean with a fight?
With the big superhero fight, like, and the
right, but right, see, and, like, you see all of this through the lens of finding the concept of people with powers fighting each other stupid and totally uninteresting.
No, it's not that it's all, like, just the concept of people with powers fighting each other is stupid. It's that all of these battles are basically the fucking same. That's the thing. They're all basically
the same. I don't think that's really true if you are whatsoever invested in the characters or whatsoever enjoy a superhero fight.
That's not true. Like, the roles, like, it doesn't matter. That's the whole thing, right? It, like, you're invested to the characters, but eventually they're going to reach this platform. And it's true in Star Wars and all these other things too, where it's like, it doesn't matter who the people are or what the story is before them. At the end, there's going to be a lightsaber fight between the big bad and the hero of the story, and that's going to look the same. And after a while, after 12, 15, 20, 30 movies, like, I don't understand why people just want to keep watching the same thing over and over again.
Because they're invested in the overall storytelling, because the universe at large has appealed to them, and I really just disagree that it looks the same. Mm. Like, it's formulaically the same. And I understand that you don't like that, like, you know, this entire genre of movies, for the most part, ends with a fight between people with powers. Like, that's what it is.
And they fly through the air, and then one person sometimes almost dies, and then, oh, wait, no, they're going to come back and get him at the end with that one little extra bit of power that they have. Like, you know, like, I knew exactly how this was going to play out, and I don't even watch these movies.
Well, you watch you've seen a fair amount of them, so
yeah, well,
it doesn't take a genius to track that the series might end with a fight between the antagonist and the protagonist. Again, to me, like, the journey is interesting, and if you're into crazy superhero fights, the fights are interesting too. So, like, I, you know, you're not into it, and I'll grant you that, but, you know, almost every horror movie ends with one of the protagonists surviving and, you know, never going to that haunted house again. Like, I, you know, genre movies are genre movies.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure, you know, and look, there, in the same way that there's one or two horror movies where everyone dies or the good guy turns out to be the bad guy or whatever it is, like, there are one or two superhero movies where it doesn't end with the big bad superhero fight and it's, you know, different fundamentally. But for the most part, yeah, that's how they're going to end. That's what the genre is. So I just don't know that it's worth getting exercised about. And I also think it's worth acknowledging that, like, your reaction to it, which is, you know, I'm not, it's well earned, but it's also well in the minority.
Yeah, well, but that's why it's worth getting exercised about, because, like, this is most of what's left of culture. Like, we keep talking about, like,
yeah,
what kind of movies get to
but
get
you
made,
know, we say that,
and
we
these
do
things are overtaking everything else.
I'm not sure they really are. We, like, we do say that. But, you know, this is TV now. And we also watched a different Disney movie that came out this weekend. We also have watched a number of more low to mid-budget movies that have come out over the last couple months. Like, is it ideal? No, but it's not like people are literally getting bamboozled and you know, eye poked when they spend their money on the superhero stuff. People are getting what they want, and a lot of people want it. And I would rather, as someone who generally enjoys the genre, I would rather have well-made stuff that does some interesting things on the way to that, you know, big bad fight than not. So, why I like something like WandaVision.
I just think it got less and less well-made as it went along. The story essentially ate itself.
But I think your experience of it being less and less well-made is just the show fundamentally being a superhero show and leaning heavier into that side of it as time went on. I think that, you know, that had to happen. And you don't like it, but I don't know that it's really a judge. Like, you keep using these words that judge the quality of the creation, and I just don't think it's accurate. I think it's just your taste.
Okay.
Like, it didn't look worse, you know what I mean? You don't like where the story goes.
That's the whole thing. Right.
Well, but it didn't look worse. The performances weren't worse.
Right. That's what I mean. The performances weren't worse, but the writing was. I'm talking about the writing.
I'm not sure the writing was worse. You don't like the direction of the story, which is fundamentally towards a conflict between two superheroes.
But it's not just the story. It's the dialogue. All right,
I don't know that we have to get too far into this. Yeah, I think we can move on, but I don't know that I noticed a specific degrading of dialogue as the show went on. And I'm not sitting here trying to tell you WandaVision is The Wire for a new generation. I'm just saying I thought it was pretty good and enjoyable.
Yeah, I found it oppressive.
Well, no one made you watch it.
It's true. No one made me watch it. No one made me watch it. I got suckered into thinking that this would be different, and it was not. It was not different.
Yeah. I mean, what are the superhero movies that you feel like have been, you know, different in the way you're talking about? The one that jumps to my mind is, what was it called, Logan? The you know, depressing Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, some of the Wolverine movies, I think, in general, have been different.
Maybe Deadpool? Obviously,
you know, some of the Batman movies are you know, the Nolan Batman movies, I think, are right, the gold standard that people go to in terms of...
Did you like those?
You know, I did. Yeah, I did like the Nolan Batman movies. Okay. That was back before I was fatigued.
Well, and perhaps notably, there's a lot less magic powers in those.
Yeah, also true. You know, but like, I'm like everybody else. Like, I liked superheroes as a kid. Like, the Super Friends was my favorite cartoon when I was like 7.
Yes, but you distinctly, you know what I mean? But you distinctly don't like superhero. Like, here's the thing. Any superhero movie is that superhero movies to you are like the Warriors without Klay Thompson. Okay, let me work this analogy. You're gonna like this. It's not that you can't like a superhero movie, right? It's that they've already, just by being a superhero, sort of used up their three strikes with you, or two of their three strikes, I guess. So the margin for error is gone, right? It's not that the Warriors can't be pretty good without Klay Thompson if everybody else is healthy playing great. But, like, the margin for error goes away because... You're like, I'll give you one weird magic thing before I'm out. And they've done that just by existing. So, like, I think that's sort of what happens.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, look, I would say I didn't have a problem with superhero movies writ large until they became, like, just incessant. Right? That to me was the breaking point. I got tired of watching this story.
I understand your point, but I also would suggest to you that they have become incessant at the same time as there's been a gigantic content explosion. And even though we're about to say, hey, this is a pretty quiet week, we're only watching a couple shows, it's because we chose not to watch like three or five other things from the present and past that we could have added to the list if we really felt like breaking our backs with this stuff. There's so much content that I would argue... While the preponderance of superhero films and the success of many of them has changed the film market, it has not slowed down content that you will enjoy consuming. And there's more than enough of it out there. So just
I would argue that the people who make content would say differently. But
really, how do you mean?
Like, you don't you hear actors and directors complaining about what kind of movies they're able to make and how many of them have to sort of submit to doing a franchise thing to do other things?
Yeah, I mean, how
the lack of original intellectual property getting made today.
But I think I think that, first of all, has always been the case. You know, creative original stuff has always been hard to make because rich people always prefer a safer dollar. So that's just the nature of capitalism and art, I think. And I'm not saying it's good, but I don't think superhero movies did that to Hollywood. I think superhero movies exaggerate that point because you spend the equivalent of, you know, 5 mid-budget movie costs on one superhero movie, but you make the money of like 10 times. So
I know we need to move on from this because we weren't even talking about this today, but like, is there a difference to you in the like the CGI end battles from movie to movie? Like, can you point to a couple and go, oh, Captain America Winter's Bone was, you know, I'm being facetious. You know, that was the one that had a really like amazing end battle, because it's like they just keep spending more and more money on these, and maybe it's my untrained, annoyed eye. But it's kind of like, I don't.
Captain America Civil War actually did have a tremendous, like, big multi-hero fight scene. I like a lot of the Spider-Man stuff. I think it probably depends on just like which superheroes sort of stuff you dig. I like Deadpool because it's usually a funny fight scene, but also incredibly violent. Yeah, I mean, I can tell you which ones I generally have liked better. But, like, two witches flying around is obviously different than, you know, Deadpool flipping and shooting people. Like, I understand your point, and there is a level of sameness to the genre. But, again, I don't see that as how dare they.
I just
they,
don't see
what lazy
two witches flying around shooting each other with magic bolts being all the different from Deadpool flipping around and shooting somebody with a gun. I guess that's maybe that's just me.
Well, because I think fundamentally you're kind of checked out of the whole experience by that point, because you're annoyed that instead of like some revelatory ending, all the plot that you just sat through is leading to a fight between two superheroes. And what I'm saying is tough shit, because that's what this genre is.
Yeah, but that's why the genre is boring, because
to
it's
you.
All a slave to dumb fanboy demand. Dumb and unreasonable fanboy demand.
I don't think it is a slave to that. I think that's just the genre. I think like you're picking nits with something you don't like, which it just does. It's not. I don't know that there's anywhere to go with it.
Well, hopefully I'm blowing holes in things I don't like, not picking nits.
No, but that's the thing. You're not blowing holes because you're
CGI
all you're really
size holes.
Yeah, all you're really saying though is I don't like this genre. I don't like this genre over and over again.
All right, fine. I don't like this genre.
Like, it's like if you were watching swimming, right? And Michael Phelps is doing the butterfly. And you're like, look at this silly motherfucker flopping around in the water, splashing like an asshole. This is so
dumb. No, it's not like that.
This
is
so stupid.
Like, I don't watch much swimming, but when I watch Michael Phelps and Katie Ledecky in the pool, I can tell that this is different from the normal swimming that I might see. That's the difference.
Okay, it's like watching a close race between three people in swimming and being like, look at these idiots flopping around in the pool. You're right.
But
it's not Michael Phelps. The point is, like, you don't watch or have any interest in swimming. So, like, if it's Michael Phelps, you'll watch. Like, did you enjoy Black Panther and Logan?
Yeah.
Right?
There you go.
So, all right. But now what you're doing is you're like watching a race in the U.S. championships that Michael Phelps is not participating in, making fun of swimming. And it's just I just am saying to you, we get it.
But
you don't like swimming.
It's not just about that, right? It's because this was sold as, hey, this is a really good race, and it turned out to just be the same swimming. You know what I'm saying? Right? Like that's why we got into one division, right? Was that it was not
I don't think it was sold as Black Panther or Logan, and that's kind of my point.
Correct.
It was
not
sold,
Black Panther or Logan.
It was sold as really good.
It was interesting.
And what you're saying is, I'm really only interested in Michael Phelps, not swimming. And that's fine.
Yeah. Yep.
But
that is correct.
In this case, it's more like actually another co-host of mine who, every time the sport of soccer comes up, talks about how stupid and lame and soft it is. And how little interest
he has.
Yeah, but
that's just wrong. I'm actually right.
I don't think I need to analyze that comment with respect to the analogy I just made at all. And I think it's time for us to jump into what we were actually supposed to talk about this week.
Well, but all right, that was really loaded. I don't appreciate it. I do not appreciate it. So, and by the way, Damon will lose the time on that argument.
Well, but haven't you already lost the time and money?
Yeah, that's why. Why do you think I'm so mad?
Yeah.
I lost.
Right.
I'm losing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm
but,
not gonna,
but again,
you know, there's going to be a million more of these fucking things.
Well, but just
but
like.
We're not going to cover them on this damn show. That's,
just like, exactly. And just like Damon with soccer, as soccer becomes more and more widely televised in the U.S., there'll still be basketball and football and baseball on TV for him to watch. And there's still plenty of other things for you to enjoy, like potentially any of the things we assigned for homework this week, none of which were WandaVision.
Okay, but I shouldn't say I didn't enjoy any of them. That's not true. Can we start with let's start with Raya.
Okay.
Because that was on the Disney Plus platform, and you know.
Disney Plus Plus, if you will.
Disney Plus Plus, yeah, okay. I think we have hit the place. I will say this. I do not regret watching Raya, but I do regret that it cost $30. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I'm you know, there were two of us, so I guess it's more like $15 a person, which is not so different than going to see it in the theater. But this is the sort of thing where if we hadn't been doing it for the podcast and we had just watched it in June when it was free on Disney Plus, both of us would have felt happier at the end of it. Not because I enjoyed it. In fact, I thought it was really good, but there was nothing pressing.
No, it doesn't change my view of the movie at all. Just side note, like somewhere between the $20 that I've been fine with paying for some of these theatrical releases at home and the $30
for a
Disney
Plus
cartoon.
Yeah. And because fundamentally, like, it is a Disney cartoon. It's a really good one. And they were really good at making Disney cartoons. So, it's neither surprising nor was it a disappointing experience. But, you know, unless you have a child begging to see it because all their friends have already seen it, if your kid is young enough to not that they don't know this movie came out and you could just wait till July when it's free to show it to them, I would say go ahead and do that. And you'll love it in July.
Yeah. That said, I have no criticism with this movie.
Zero.
Whatsoever.
Zero.
I can't think of, like, technically it's great.
Looks incredible.
The story is beautiful. There's a message about trust and human beings getting along that
should resonate.
Perfect for our time, and particularly with kids.
Yep.
All of that is really great. I thought Awkwafina and Tran did really good voice work. This is a story that, you know, Disney has not always told all that well. These kind of like stories in other cultures. that I think that they nailed in this one. It's diverse in a way that's not necessarily even pushing diversity in your face. It's just sort of a, you know, a tale of like a certain region. And
it's not actually, you know, the region itself is not recognizable per se, but the story is very clearly of a certain part of the world. Yeah. But it's, you're right. It's not obnoxious or like, it doesn't feel like a, some of Disney's attempts at this have felt like, you know, sort of a sketch about a diversity hire.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed.
And this just felt like a good story that happened to take place in a particular type of culture. And also just really cleverly written, as you said, good voice work, just like all the things you have come to expect out of a quality Disney flick, frankly.
Yeah. You know, with the, I mean, I think, you know, I didn't necessarily expect the computer animation that they did, but all of that, like, you know, they nailed. It was an enjoyable experience from start to finish. I would have enjoyed it all that much more for $10 less or so, but no regrets.
It just does seem very extreme. To charge $30 above your streaming service, especially when, like, at the exact same time over on HBO Max, you're getting theater releases for free with your subscription. Like, I don't totally understand. I mean, I guess it's just people are willing to pay it is what it comes down to, but it's kind of a bummer for Disney to handle it that way, particularly during the pandemic.
I honestly think that's what it is. I think that they would assume that a large percentage of their audience are parents with kids who are like literally tugging at them going, get me Raya. Right.
And they're in the house all day long with them.
Right. Yep. And really
just desperate for ways to distract them from being infuriating.
And they think they'll throw down the $30 without thinking twice about it. Right. I'm assuming that's the line of thought there, but I could
it
be
probably
wrong.
It probably is.
but yeah, I would say this is definitely an enjoyable movie for your kids. And one that they could watch over and over and over again and probably torture you with if you're in that situation.
Yeah, but honestly, like, I think, you know, okay, when you say that, what's the first movie that pops into your head?
Frozen?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't feel like there's anything as annoying as Let It Go in Raya.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So I guess what I'm saying is,
so I don't really know.
I haven't seen Frozen either. All I know is the song.
Yeah.
And,
but, you know, parents seem to actually like Frozen from what I can tell. So I'm not really.
Well, no, I think it's a good.
Frozen.
Well, that's my point. I'm not saying this is better than Frozen. I'm saying I'm not sure if it has memeable moments. They might be either funnier or a little bit less annoying than children running around the house going, "Let it go, let it go."
Yeah. You're saying it might be more rewatchable, I guess, right, than Frozen.
Or if not rewatchable, just again, like the annoying thing that your children do from Raya and the Last Dragon could be less annoying than Let It Go.
Yeah. You're attuned to this. I can tell as
well
in this podcast.
I am. I'm not really. I'm just speculating. My kid is 22 months in a couple days. So he's too young for TV, really. We did, when we started the movie before he went to sleep and, you know, tried to see if he had any interest, and nah.
He's
like, whoa,
time?
Look at that stuff on the screen. And then he's like, I'm going to play with these trucks.
Yeah. Do you have like screen time guidelines in mind for him when he does become old enough to be interested in these things?
We certainly will have guidelines. We do not have them written out yet.
Gotcha. When do kids start watching stuff like that? 3, 4?
Not two.
Hmm.
I mean, I do think, like there, he'll watch something for 3 minutes. You know? He has like 5 words. He can't follow a narrative, you know?
Yeah.
And even like cartoon stuff, like there's this one video that he has seen a handful of times because it's for a song called the Cleanup Song. And it's just a little like South Park level animated video. And someone singing, you know, pick up your toys and put them away. And, you know, we'll kind of show it to him and then make him clean up and we'll all put his toys away or whatever, right?
What a great idea for a song.
Great song.
How helpful for you.
And it totally works. Now, in fact, sometimes, like, if you, at the end of the day, we'll be like, all right, time to put everything away. And he'll, like, point at a phone, like, all right, put on the goddamn song then. but then he'll throw everything. He loves, like, throwing his Legos into the box. Anyway, the point is he's not up to Raya and the Last Dragon, so I don't have any real insight. I'm just speculating that it's less annoying than Frozen.
All right. Well, speaking of musical numbers, let's talk about Coming to America.
Coming to America.
Cause, you know, I was surprised at the amount of musical numbers in Coming to America. I don't recall there being that many musical numbers in the first one. Did you?
There is some music, but not as much. You're right.
There was some like serious like choreography happening in some of these, and like
they had that. There was like the African dance choreography in the first one.
There was that moment where Lavelle meets his arranged bride, and all of a sudden they're like doing a song and dance together, and I'm like, "What?"
It was very silly.
How did we get here? Where'd you stand on the movie as a whole?
I liked it. Now, I watched this in as close to a movie theater as I'm going to get for a while, which is the wife and I used a holiday gift from her grandmother to buy ourselves a backyard inflatable movie screen. And
oh, that's cool.
So we had a couple of friends over, literally two, and all sat in the backyard with a fire burning and watched the movie together on a big screen. And it was delightful. You know? It was funny. It was
the experience was delightful or the movie was delightful?
I'd say both. I thought it was pretty funny. It's not as good as the first one, clearly. But I enjoyed it. I had fun.
Mm. I had fun. I'll roll with you there. Delightful is probably a little far for me, but my bar for this was low. I mean, I think right your expectation coming into something like this is that 30 years on it can't possibly be as good, and it's
no, but
not.
I would right? like it to. Here's my real expectation: like, make me laugh a few times, give me some good nostalgia, and. Know thyself. This movie knows what it is. Like, they're very clearly, they're like, hey, we're not here to win any awards, you guys. We're just going to have a little fun and get out of your way. And I thought that's what it did.
Mm. See, so I would say two of those three for me. And the one that I would say is missing for me was the laughs. I enjoyed these people together. You know what I mean?
You didn't think there were a few laughs?
Like it was all pleasant. That's what I would say.
You didn't laugh at pleasant. You didn't laugh at sexual chocolate?
Not really, no. And like, you know, obviously the first one is that, all like it's got busting laughs. You know what I mean? Like I am sitting here today with I have Coming to America sneakers that I you know what I mean like yeah, oh yeah.
That feels like a dope collector's item.
They're you know, it's Giannis's favorite movie, so he had a pair made. But
of course it's Giannis's favorite movie. That is that's one of the best things I have ever heard.
Yeah. I will send you a picture later.
Oh my god.
So yeah, I mean, with the Jerry curl and like there's so many great things, right, that you remember from, and there's nothing you're going to remember from this, but that's fine. Like, I didn't expect any of that coming in, right? Like, it's just like, hey, here's some more time with the gang. That part nailed correctly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Knowing what it is, nailed correctly. I didn't really get the gut bust, but I'm like, okay with it. I got nothing to.
I'm not saying it was. I'm not. Well, but Coming to America was like shocking and hilarious and wild. Yeah. And this wasn't any of those things. But I think
I laughed once or twice in some of the barbershop scenes.
The barbershop scenes. Yeah.
That was yeah, good. But I mean, obviously, the original barbershop scenes are like just destroy, right?
No,
like,
look,
kill.
It does not compare favorably to its predecessor in any way. But I would recommend it if you love the original. I would recommend this one.
Yeah, I'm in that same boat. I mean, I wouldn't say don't watch this. I think particularly if you love the original, because the nostalgia factor is that part they nail.
Yeah, I would say even maybe watch the original this week, because there's probably a couple things I didn't miss because it's been a year or two since I watched that movie.
Yeah, it's on Amazon and they get deep. Like everybody's back for this. You know?
Everybody.
Everybody they could get. They brought Louis Anderson back. You know what I mean? Like,
and they said that they were forced to cast him the first time.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, they needed it. Somebody insisted they put a white guy in the movie.
How fast did you figure out that LaBelle was going to fall in love with the royal groomer?
We initially thought they were going to find out he was not actually Eddie Murphy's son and fall in love with the daughter.
Oh, okay.
That was our first guess. But then it's pretty clear pretty quickly.
Yeah,
after.
Like first scene together, you're like, okay.
Yeah. Oh, they're awful. They have awfully good banter, don't they?
Yeah. I thought also the people that they added, obviously, for this film, some of it was a flex to just be like, look, we can get Morgan Freeman and we can get, but they were all great too. Leslie Jones.
Yeah, you didn't laugh at Leslie Jones? Come on. Leslie Jones was funny in this movie, I thought.
I found Leslie Jones's presence to be pleasant, is what I, but I always find Leslie Jones's presence to be pleasant, to be honest.
Yeah, like, I think you're being a little sort of high standard-y with the laugh part of it. But
I can't think of one time she made me actually like laugh. You know what I mean? Smile. Yeah. Smile a lot. Laugh,
okay.
Not so much.
All right.
You know
fair enough.
Mean?
You're a tough laugher. I get it.
I guess.
But lots of like you were smiling the whole time, I'm sure.
Yeah. 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 Like I said, this movie's like a B minus for me. You know what I mean?
Okay. I would give it a B plus, which is not so different, really.
Yeah. 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 I have no quarrel with it. And like I said, I was not expecting Shakespeare
right
coming in.
No, it's no Shakespeare. But you know what?
Or the original.
But it is Eddie Murphy, and it is like pretty successful. And like, I think so far the Eddie Murphy comeback is off to a rip-roaring start, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I think Eddie has settled into a place where he's comfortable where he is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Talking about this movie, kind of knows what it is.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there were a lot of movies in the end of, before Eddie kind of went away. There were a lot of movies that felt like some sort of like weird, I don't want to say desperate, but like sort of doomed attempt to revive or relive something, I guess.
You thinking about like the spaceship ones?
Like that tower heist, A Thousand Words. Those were the last two movies he did before something called Mr. Church, which seems like a minor religious film.
I don't even think I remember that one.
No, I don't think it's. I'm saying I'm being serious. It seems like a small religious film drama. But other than that, he didn't do anything from 2012 to 2019. So, like, Dolomite Is My Name and Coming to America are two things that I think came off quite well. And I hope there's more stuff to come, because, like, Eddie Murphy is a creative force I would like to see in entertainment.
Yeah. I'm simultaneously hopeful and terrified that Gen Z will discover, like, you know, mid-80s Eddie Murphy.
I'll say this.
There's a lot that does not age well in terms of social mores at the time.
There's a lot that does not age well, particularly homophobic stuff. But I don't know. It's tough. The stuff he's saying, first of all, is mostly really funny. And second of all, is generally more playing off the stereotypes of the time than it is truly nasty about, the gay community. I mean, it's ignorant stuff. Like, there's a bit about AIDS in Delirious where he's talking about, you know, what if his lady goes out and hangs out with her gay friend and comes home with that AIDS on her lips. And, like, that's dumb. And you're right, it aged horribly. But it's also not, like, virulent or, you know, mean, necessarily.
Yeah, I agree with that. But you're talking about a generation that does not always handle these things with that reasons perspective.
No, you're right. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see. But I don't know that he'll be held responsible for saying those things in the early 80s.
I hope so. Because my point being was that, I mean, this was undisputedly the funniest man in America for a
decade.
Pretty long stretch of time.
Yeah.
And I would say, I don't know that, you know, when you look back at these, you know, the comedic greats of like the last 20, 30, 40 years, I don't know that you can find a stand-up legend who has anywhere close to the film body of work that Eddie Murphy put together.
Unless you count Robin Williams.
Yeah, you're right. I guess I don't think of Robin Williams, like, I don't think of Robin Williams as stand-up.
But he was.
In that, like, yes, he was. I'm not saying he was a stand-up. He was very good stand-up. I just don't know that I put him quite in that legend class of stand-up of, like, a Pryor or a Chappelle.
He's not as, you know.
He's like the next tier down, maybe, to me. If that makes sense.
In terms of like, sell out a stadium popularity as a stand-up, yes, because he stopped doing it early in his film and TV career, pretty much. But in terms of influence and how much he's respected as a stand-up, I would say he's pretty close.
Yeah. I wonder where Billy Crystal is on that scale as a stand-up, what people think of him.
Pretty
low. I guess he had a pretty serious film career.
Yeah. He's pretty low, I think, as a stand-up.
Yeah,
as like a performer and Oscar presenter, I think he's the best.
Yeah, and he was another one that, as time didn't help him towards the end. Steve Martin is another one.
I'm pretty sure Billy Crystal's still alive, just for the record.
Yeah. I get it. I was not saying he was dead.
Towards the end,
when was the last time you saw Billy Crystal hosting an Oscars? You know what I mean? Like,
he did do one a few years ago.
Right. Like what year was that? Now we got to Google it.
They brought him back. I can't remember. 2012. So it's been a while.
Yeah. Steve Martin is the other one I would think of. And he kind of stopped doing stand-up, right? Because he felt like it was too easy.
He's a weird guy. I don't know if it was exactly that, but he's a weird guy. But yes, he was a stand-up. But he was also more of, even as a stand-up, he was more of like a performance artist. Like, he was playing the banjo and doing weird stuff.
Yeah, well, weird stuff was kind of his bit. All right, let's move on to what the hell else did we watch this week? Biggie. You want to talk about Biggie?
I do. This may have been my favorite thing that we watched this week.
Okay.
And
yeah, I'm definitely going to be lower on this than you, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, okay. Here's what I'll say. I found this to be a very interesting look at sort of the rise to stardom of Biggie Smalls, who don't say that because the original Biggie Smalls is going to sue him. He's Notorious Big or Notorious B.I.G. There was just a lot of it was nostalgia. But I do think, you know, hearing from his mom about, you know, and his friends about like what he was going through growing up and just how much of Ready to Die in particular is really autobiographical, and not just autobiographical, but like an intense and artful, like he made choices, artful choices to have it as, you know, sort of street inspired and gritty and the raw production as it was. Like, this was not just, you know, this was a really thoughtful artist who was really just getting started. He's 24 years old when he's killed. And I thought it did a really good job of leaning into that artistic side and how his life was sort of this combination of his intelligence and artistic impulses with his need and desire to provide for the people around him immediately. I found all that stuff interesting. And also, just like the rare videos of him rapping and the old interviews, like, God, he was so good and such a natural superstar talent. And I found that stuff interesting. Hearing from the guy down the street who was a jazz musician who tried to mentor him and keep him off the streets growing up. Hearing from the producer who would pick him and his friends up and just drive them around the city to try to keep him off the corners. Like, I don't know. I found all that stuff interesting, and the music is just, he's my favorite.
Yeah. A lot of that I agree with. And, you know, this ultimately was a little less than the sum of its parts. Like, I feel like it should have been incredible because, yes, everything you said about Biggie is 100% true. Like, his music is incredible. They got everybody I think you could think to get, pretty much, with the exception of maybe some of the West Coast people.
There was a point where I was thinking, man, it'd be interesting to hear from his daughter, but then she probably doesn't remember him, you know, which is just sad.
Which is sad. But, you know, they, you know, like you said, like the jazz musician and like the childhood friends and, you know, a lot of that stuff was interesting. And I think that there was, you know, they like the fact that they had a guy who really kind of just became the guy who filmed everything.
Yeah.
Meant that there was a lot of really good in the moment footage available to them.
Totally.
And yet I feel like for me, this, I don't know if it was kind of the narrative shifts, time shifts and stuff like that. Like this movie was not for me as interesting as I think it should have been based on all the ingredients that were present.
Interesting.
Yeah. I just found myself not always engaged in it. And, you know, that's not the fault of the subject matter. And like I said, all the ingredients were in place. Like, I don't know. I felt like it was a little too long. I felt like they didn't quite have together all the things that they wanted to say about this guy's life. They just had some interesting footage and some interesting ideas, and it just didn't quite come together for me, if that makes sense.
No, it does, and I can't totally disagree with that. I mean, I do, and I'm not sure that there was any sort of deep artistic choice like the one I'm about to describe was actually made here, but there, you know, it there's a feeling of like, yeah, it doesn't necessarily have a narrative that holds together too well, and it just kind of ends and he's dead. But I mean, I think that reflects his life to a certain degree, you know, like there is a sort of chaos of, and that's a strong word, but there's a sort of franticness about, like, here we are at the beginning of his life, and then hold on, let's go to Jamaica real quick, and wait, let's flash back to his mom's you know, coming to America and having him, and you know, the sort of circumstances of his birth, and hold on, now we're jumping back to Vegas and Tupac just got shot. But I think all of that kind of reflects his life. Like, he was a kid with this remarkable, incredible, explosive talent that, you know, is just trying to get by, and then is just trying to provide for his family, and then, you know, is being
and tugged, friends, right?
Like, and really friends. He's being tugged at by fame. He's also being tugged at by this criminal life. And oh my God, it's exploding. And oh my God, he's a millionaire. And oh my God, his former friend just got shot and is blaming him. And now, oh my God, his friend is dead. And now, oh my God, he's dead and it's over. And in the process, he had two of the biggest hip hop albums in the history of the game. And, you know, one that is, I think, undeniably a top five album in the genre of all time. And it's over. And we can't ask him about any of it. We can only interpret it from, like, this information. So, again, I don't know if that's intentional, but I do think, in a way, it reflects his life.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I just, I don't know. This left me wanting more. And I don't mean more from Biggie. I mean, obviously, you want more music from Biggie if you could get it, of course. But
I do think that deserves a minute from us here. That guy... I mean, something I had never – what maybe the coolest part of this documentary for me was when that jazz musician we just mentioned was talking about his flow and how it mimicked –
the drummer for the part with the drummer?
Yes, it mimicked a bebop jazz drum solo. And all of a sudden I heard it. You know, it was like – that was like a real holy shit music moment for me when that guy said that, because – that's the part of why I was always, you know, growing up in Chicago, you really had a choice between East and West Coast. Like, I guess we're more, you know, on the East Coast side of things, but Chicago hip hop is really its own thing. And at the same time, you know, you weren't living on one of the coasts and having to sort of rep your set. So yeah. I really had, I was like a free agent in the Biggie v. Tupac argument, and I just always gravitated towards Biggie, specifically this album, Ready to Die. And that sort of enlightened me to my appreciation as much as anything ever has, because it's always been about that flow. Like, Tupac is incredible. And you know, a poet in many ways that Biggie is not. But it's all very pop formulated in terms of the style of music and flow. It all sounds at home on top 40 radio. And, like, Ready to Die was played, but it never sounded like top 40 hits. It was angry and aggressive, and the beats were raw. And
yeah, the top 40 side came from Puffy's involvement, I feel like. You know what I mean? The fact that it could get on top 40 radio at all.
You're right. And
that
look, if you
the
go
old soul samples and those kind of things.
Uh-huh.
You know,
and Life After Death has a lot more, you know, look, no one's gonna confuse Hypnotize with Machine Gun Funk. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're like it's a different album. But Ready to Die, and I think that's why I sort of grew into a real indie underground hip hop fan, because of off-kilter flows and, you know, sort of abstract lyrical stuff that I think Biggie opened the door for me to the MF Dooms and you know, Mad Libs of rap that I've come to really appreciate on a deeper level, and that it sort of defined my taste in hip-hop as I've grown. Like, all of that connected in my brain with the description of his flow as sort of mimicking the weird staccato sort of offbeat emphasis style of a bebop jazz drum solo. I just thought that was sort of revelatory. And there were a few moments in this for me that were not that dramatic, but of a similar ilk, where it was like, oh, that's really interesting and cool, and I never thought about that, and it sort of deepens my appreciation for one of my favorite artists.
I thought the jazz musician part was most of his scenes were really great. I liked a lot of the childhood friend parts. You're right.
Yeah.
The producer stuff and talking about, like, picking him up on the corner that you mentioned earlier as well. Those were highlights for me. All right, we should move
on. I guess the moral of this is, like, if you love Biggie, you will love this movie, even if it's not a perfect documentary.
Yeah, yeah. I 100% agree with that. If you love Biggie, I think even if you just like Biggie, you'll love this movie. And not love this movie, but it's worth watching.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
All right, so last but not least, the Real World Reunion. It may kind of be least. So this,
really?
I'm very curious. I'm very curious to hear your take on this, because we learned, you know, during the week as you and I were talking, that you had not actually seen the first season of The Real World.
Yeah, I may have seen an episode here or there, but like I realized immediately these are not my real world people. You know, like as soon as it came on, I was like, okay, I kind of remember Heather the rapper.
Yeah,
and like. I don't know. I guess I sort of know these people, but and so then I looked up casts, and it's really like San Francisco is the first cast where I mostly recognize all of them, and then it's more like Seattle where I was really like watching it.
Yeah, I mean Seattle to me is the peak Real World season. But
yeah, yeah. I mean it felt like everybody was watching it at that point.
But you know, the first season, as described in this, really was a phenomenon, right? You know, because
well, and, they were and I
doing
wonder,
something truly new, you know?
Yeah, and I wonder, because it sounds like you were not super high on this, I wonder if not really caring about the first, you know, the actual season maybe makes this in a way more interesting to me, because part of me was kind of like, huh, this really was a moment, you know, that they created effectively that changed the landscape of American television forever. Really, truly, that's what they did. And like, it's also kind of a study in sociology, right? In like human relations, in race issues. Like to see from 91, is it Kevin? It's Kevin, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To see the stuff that he was saying that like is not that controversial today, but 30 years ago was like, bro, chill. What are you talking about? America is a white supremacist country? That's insane. You're being a crazy person. And like obviously he was right then as well, but just the difference in the climate is pretty remarkable.
Yeah. You know, the it's interesting to watch that argument back.
Yeah.
You know, in a modern day lens.
Right.
And you understand, and I think he understands now, like sort of looking back on it, like everything he was talking about was right. But the thing that people were only going to see was the way he was saying it.
Well, and he was fighting, essentially he was fighting an unwinnable battle at that point.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, and unfortunately is still one of the things we often put on black people in these conversations, that they don't get the luxury of being able to be emotional. And
we just talked about this with Chris Harrison and Rachel Lindsay.
Right. And so you watch him and the thing that catches your eye and sort of makes you a little uncomfortable, right, is how up in her face he gets about things.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
Even though she's really up in his face and calling him an asshole and all these other things.
Right. But he's bigger than she is. And he's like looking down on her chest to chest. And you're like, all right, everybody calm down.
And like kind of he's not making any contact, but like he kind of does that like chest sort of bump. You know what I mean? With where your arms go out when
look, it's the sort of thing that if it was two dudes chest to chest yelling at each other, you would be like, break it up. Don't fight. Now, I'm not sure you ever think he's going to hit her or anything, but he's definitely all up in her shit being angry at her. And
right.
It's a little bit jarring to watch. But at the same time, she's saying things that are obviously infuriating, you know? And it's like, I get it. I get where you're coming from, dude. And today, I think, like, before they ever got chest to chest, someone would be calling her Karen. You know what I mean?
Right. And you watch that, but you also kind of understand as you're watching it back through that lens that emotion was the part that people were going to react to and that was not going to play out well for him.
100%.
You know, and that's some of that's sad. But I also thought it was really like, you know, it's heartwarming to see that the daughter that Julie raised. You know what I mean?
Yeah, although it looks like she is still not as enlightened as her daughter from the scenes of later in the season.
Yeah, there's going to be some rubs, I have a feeling. You know what I mean? You know, it's also super weird, you know, and obviously it's not the show's fault. It's the world's fault, you know.
Yeah.
Just sort of like the Eric Nies, who really was, right? Like, you get a little sense of that in the clip from the reunion special. You know, I mean, Eric and Julie were a lot of the center of the narrative of that first season, right? To the clear other housemates' resentment, right? So to have him,
they
as
were
sort
hooking
of this,
up.
Like, no, that was the thing. It was like there was some sexual tension, some unresolved sexual tension.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Between them, so I think that was a lot of where the story went to. You know
right.
what I mean? So it is weird to just have him, you know, as the sort of COVID casualty, like, hey, here's a video message from me
right.
on TV. And I don't know how that's going to play out. It seems like they're there for 6 days, I think they said, right? So
is that it?
It doesn't seem like there's any way he's going to have cleared the protocol to show up on the show at any point other than this way. So,
right. Well, depending on how long they were quarantined for ahead of time and when he tested positive, I have no idea, but yeah, that is annoying.
Yes. And it definitely seems like he's kind of evolved into like a new age hippie. So I would like to know more about that because obviously that's
like...
very different from the hip hop b-boy dancing model that we knew when he was on the show.
When he does show up, there are going to be several crystals in his suitcase.
Yes. Agreed. And he's wearing that big, like, you know, Colorado sweater.
Yep. 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 It was made by Native Americans.
I don't know. The other thing, too, about this experience is that it was just, it sort of slaps you across the face with the passage of time, you know, and, you know, just.
Yeah. See, that I didn't have because I don't know these people, but I'm sure.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what's going to do that for me is the challenge OGs.
Yeah, that
like
too.
When Alton looks 45, that's going to hit me right in the heart.
You know, I have a feeling Alton's not going to look 45.
Yeah, that's true. He's probably I probably chose the wrong cast member.
Cyrus will look 45, but
you know who it's going to be?
Looked old
inside. Ruthie. Ruthie's there, right?
Yeah, Ruthie.
That one's going to hit me like a ton of bricks.
Yeah, that'll be bad. Tech, I think.
Oh God! Yeah. Yeah, yeah, totally.
Oh man,
Katie, what do you think Katie looks like?
A little weathered. Weathered, I think.
Yep.
I hope she quit smoking somewhere between now and then.
Yeah, that'd be great.
When do we know when the challenge OGs starts?
I don't know that we have an official start date because I don't know that we have an official end date for double agents, right?
Yeah. There is a trailer that exists for OGs, but I don't believe the date is in it. I have watched that trailer. It's short, but it does exist.
I don't see any. It just says it reunites 22 of the boldest and fiercest challenge all-stars from the original Real World and Road Rules seasons.
Yeah. So I hear they're going to try to bring back Road Rules too.
They are. Brand new cast, 14 years after the last season.
Yeah, 14 years. Holy crap. Yeah. Where do you see this reunion thing going over the course of 6 episodes? I mean, obviously we've seen some teaser trailers.
I mean, ironically, I think probably back to a lot of the same places that the original one went. Right? Like, drama, anger, some ignorance around race. Like, I think it's going to be the whole, a little bit of homophobia. It's going to be the whole kit and caboodle.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, you brought up the word sociological experiment. Like,
yes.
And I think this is still true by, you know, in season three or whatever, when you got on board, I think it was still, it wasn't really till Vegas where the real world started to like shift more into like, let's watch these people party and make bad choices.
Yeah. It was more actually like, trying to be the real world.
Yes. Yeah. And those first season was very much like, let's film this like a sociological documentary. You know what I mean? And there were a lot of important discussions about life, it seemed like, as much as them kind of like screwing around or whatever. So, it'd be interesting to see. I imagine
it does seem like they saved the heavy stuff, right? It seems like they saved the heavy stuff for later episodes. They're like, let's just all get back in the house and have some happy feels with each other, and then we're going to blow up your lives later.
Yeah, you can tell the producers are going to be prodding them with stuff. You can just tell.
It's still the real world.
Yeah. So not having watched it and now having watched a half an hour of this, do you feel like you know the castmates of the show?
I feel like I have a pretty good sense of who they are. Yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, like they showed enough flashbacks for it to be a pretty good picture of sort of what their characters, so to speak, were in the original version, and enough, scenes from the future episodes to get a sense that while all of them seem to have obviously grown up to some degree, varying degrees, none of them seem to be fundamentally different people.
Yeah, I would say that's true. Eric seems maybe the most different, but we didn't get to explore that a lot. Yeah. Yeah. So, and I don't know. I'm actually curious. It's like, what is Heather B doing now?
That's unclear to me, but whatever she's doing, she bought an awful lot of booze.
She did.
Like if she's not working for a liquor distributor, she spent a lot of money on that. Am I wrong?
If you notice, they were getting booze ready for her before she even arrived.
Yeah, maybe she works for a 12-step program.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's what she's doing now. She's doing well. Clearly, she's not doing the 12-step program. She's getting ready for the 12-step program.
No, this is her vacation. She doesn't want to take work with her on vacation. You know.
Right. Yep. Yeah, that makes sense. all right. Well, look, I'm going to keep watching this. So I probably will too.
Just to kind of see what happens. So maybe when the shit really goes down, maybe we check back in on it.
Yeah. Although I kind of feel like I may probably not check in for a couple weeks so that I can watch it. I don't know that I want to watch it a half hour at a time.
They should have dropped it all. Six episodes. Yeah. I mean, that's just a few hours of TV. I think they should have just dropped it, or at least two at a time.
Would have been a good binge, and I understand obviously that they're trying to get some eyeballs on.
Yeah, but I think you got to be careful with the week to week thing. Like, if you do it with something that doesn't really catch on in the culture, people just forget about it.
Yeah, pretty quickly. We'll see what happens with this one. All right, I think that covers pretty much everything this week, right?
Yeah, we've been here a long time, and we wasted all that time bickering about Marvel.
It's true. It really just—I don't know. That whole thing just bummed me out.
I get it. Let's not do it again. What do we have for homework?
We have a light load this week. There's a movie called Moxie.
Yeah, teen comedy drama. I love it.
Amy Poehler's in it,
which I feel like when Amy Poehler's in it, she probably also like had something to do with producing it, maybe. I don't know how to learn about the producers of something on Netflix. That's not really an easy find. So
she's not playing a teen. It's not like a Ben 15 scenario.
It's true. She's not playing a teen. There are other non-teens. Marsha Gay Harden and Ike Barinholtz, both of whom we enjoy, and a couple other young actresses you may or may not recognize. I'm trying to remember the name of this one young lady who I do recognize. Her name is, I think it is Alicia Pascual Pena. Yeah, she was in the Saved by the Bell remake.
Right. As you said that, it came to me. I'm like, oh, Saved by the Bell reboot.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, so you'll recognize her, and then there's a bunch of other young people, along with Amy Poehler. One of the lead young people is Patrick Schwarzenegger, who I can't imagine is not the son of Arnold. He is the son of Arnold and Maria, Patrick Schwarzenegger, now acting.
All
better
right.
Looking than his dad, I have to say.
Well, you know, got them Kennedy genes.
Yeah, the Kennedy genes did good things for him.
While we were on the subject of Marcia Gay Harden, she also pops up in The Morning Show,
yes,
which we, I believe, mentioned last week.
Yeah, we did.
And you're close to finishing, right? So we'll dig into The Morning Show a little bit.
Sweet.
There's a new season of Last Chance U. They're doing basketball this time.
Yeah, so, I'm into it. Let's do it.
Yeah, that's a sport that is ripe for that kind of story, too.
No doubt.
Like, so.
No doubt. Have they never done basketball before? Is this the first time?
I believe this is the first time. I think they've all been football to this point.
Interesting.
So I'm kind of excited for that. You know a little bit what you're going to get. But
also the first black head coach on Last Chance U.
Is that true?
Which
really?
Seems important. According to The Undefeated, yes, that is true.
Boy,
it is following the East Los Angeles College basketball team.
Yeah, fair enough. They did have an Asian coach.
Yes, that's right. On the most recent season that we watched and talked about.
Yep, indeed. Indeed. I would say the Asian coach is probably the rarest of all, unfortunately.
Indeed.
All right. So
that's it.
That's
short
it.
Week.
Those are the three shows. It's gonna be a short week. There's also, you know, plenty to watch out there in the world.
Yeah. So go watch it. Just don't come talk to me about it. And we gotta go. This may be a short week coming up, but we've done a long week now. So bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The lights out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.